Ladies and gentlemen, put on your 60s goggles. It's time for the Kobayashi Maru Dance Party. We've got our science officer, Sam Truman, our chief engineer, Neil Gozzle, and the expendable red shirt, Rizia Douglas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Kobayashi Maru Dance Party. So, we're starting off a new year with a new season, season two. Things are starting pretty good here. Sorry for the leave of absence.
It's good to be back.
It is good to be back. So, gentlemen, how y'all doing?
I want to hear Sam's story because he said the most interesting last week.
Yeah.
About being trapped in Chicago for 12 hours and sleeping for an hour. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It does sound like a lot of fun. But you got to see, you got to do some other stuff before that.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't just go to Chicago to
you
sleep at the airport.
You don't know that. I could have.
Well, then you have a very poor vacation planning skills.
We went to go see our good friend Lori's wedding in Philadelphia. I can't want to say Pittsburgh. And it was amazing. And we went to there for New Year's. And that was okay, but the wedding was really the highlight, I feel. There was lots of chocolates. There was a lot of chocolate. And then we stayed in Philadelphia for a little bit. That's about the rundown of it. And then got stuck in Chicago for 12 hours. So
that's never fun. I got once stuck in an airport for 24 hours. Yeah, it sucked. I was basically waiting for the rest of the people I was going to hang out with to show up.
Was that for Disneyland?
Yes. Well, that was for Florida, yeah. The Florida trip I went to.
You win, Neil. I think the longest I got stuck at an airport was 12 hours, and it was because I missed my flight, and I had to wait for the next one to go. That was at the Denver airport, and that is probably the reason why I don't like that airport.
After you've been in an airport for, you know, more than 2 hours, you're kind of, like, sick of it already.
Yeah.
Was the one in Florida at least pretty?
The airport?
Yeah.
I mean, it was okay. There wasn't really a comfortable place to lay down, so I think I just found, like, a stone slab somewhere that was out of the way.
There never is any place comfortable in an airport. I mean, I'm lucky because I'm fairly small, so I can kind of just curl up into a ball on the seats. But
it depends,
still uncomfortable.
It depends on the seats, too, because the ones that we were at, they all had armrests between each of them, so we couldn't, like, just sleep on that, at least.
Oh, yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about, curling up in a ball between the armrests and a seat. It sucks.
Anyway, Neil, how's your...
Well, actually, I just yesterday went house shopping with my buddy Danny and his roommate Jake, and we decided on a house we're going to rent. So I'm looking forward to moving into a new place and hopefully staying there for at least more than a year.
Yeah.
Because I hate moving. But I won the coin toss. I got the master bedroom.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. Aside from that, I also got a new job back in December.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited to be making money again.
Yeah!
That's pretty much it for me. I mean, that two months I had off is all kind of a blur of board games and other stuff.
D&D.
Yes. What about you, Riz?
Well, I'm just going to keep with the Star Trek thing because that's really all I've been into for how long has it been, Sam? Like a year? A year ago when I first started watching the original series?
It was a little over a year because you started in November, I want to say.
Did I?
I want to
say. Oh, goodness. Well, so I've been pretty much watching Star Trek nonstop and I have finished Voyager. Yeah.
Ooh.
And I am now on Enterprise Season 2.
What do you think of Voyager?
I liked it. I mean, I feel that it definitely could have started off better. I mean, just think of the premise. They're, like, lost in an unknown land, or region of space.
Right.
I mean, and they're limited on their supplies, food, everything. Like, there could have been so much more conflict, and I feel many more interesting episodes for the first season. But after that, I mean, it was really good. Ending the last episode, I felt I had it was good closure. You know, I found that that last episode was a lot more satisfying than the last episode of Deep Space Nine.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that not weird, Neil? Cause, like,
a little bit.
I just thought it was funny when the Borg Queen just kind of, like, fell apart and the little time travel paradox. And, you know, they get into a lot of terrible troubles with temporal...
Temporal paradox?
Yeah. I mean, really, really a lot. Like, that's the most temporal crap I've ever seen in anything sci-fi related. Voyager.
Including Friends.
Who is your favorite character from Voyager?
The Doctor.
The Doctor? Okay, that's a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, it's the Doctor pretty much is always my favorite character, with the exception of Next Gen. I did not like Beverly Crusher. I did like what's her face in season two. Oh, I can't remember her name.
Pulaski.
You guys know who I'm like. Yeah, I did like Dr. Pulaski. But I've always been a fan of the Doctor. They're the most interesting characters in the show. So I did like the Doctor and Voyager, because
It was part of the Data conundrum, where he's an AI and he has to fight for his AI rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, but he was a really good. But, he was my favorite character.
But you're supposed to really like Seven of Nine, because she's the sex symbol, and it's supposed to appeal to everybody.
Oh my god, her boobs are so big.
They're fake. Like, not her boobs. the outfit is supposed to really emphasize that, so they padded the suit down and everything.
Yeah, well, I heard that the actress had a hard time breathing on set, because they cinched it up so tight, or they put so much, like, slimming, like...
pressure.
Spandex or whatever's in the suit to help thin her out.
Yep.
But I understand it's supposed to be like that, and she is definitely, like, I feel unnecessarily sexy.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's a good character, though. She is, her episodes are so good, and I think they, choosing to get rid of, Kes. Yeah. And replace her with Seven of Nine was a good choice. I mean, Kes was an interesting character, but
she got better in, like, right before she left.
She really just right before. And I think there was they could have written her better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot
her
better.
Character had a lot of potential, especially with her psychic abilities and her being so naive about things, and
she and Seven are basically the same character,
pretty much, except Seven is just badass.
Didn't you get sick of seeing Seven episodes, but because they're so good, you're like, oh, damn.
I never got sick of the Seven episodes. I think the Seven episodes are supremely good.
They are. I was just so tired of seeing all the emphasis on Seven. I was like, I want to see other characters do stuff, not just Seven all the time.
So, but now I'm on Enterprise, and here's my biggest complaint: the fucking theme song. I hate it so much.
It's been a long time.
I hate it so much. And I was like, when did this show come out? This was like early millennia, right?
Yeah,
it sounds
like
came out in the early 90s.
Well, that song was used back in, like, for Patch Adams. So, yes, that makes sense.
it's terrible. I feel like it detracts from the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because that's not
Star Trek.
Yeah, it's everything up until that point was, you know, wonderful, composed music. And now we've got this shitty acoustic
pop-ish
I don't even know what it is. It sounds like a Christian rock song. I don't like it. But I've learned now that I'm into the second season to tune it out. But I find Enterprise to be incredibly predictable. And once again, the Doctor, Phlox, is my favorite character. It's the most interesting one.
Phlox is cool. I really need to watch it all again.
All right, you guys ready to dive in?
Yeah, I'm so excited about Amok Time. It's one of my favorite episodes.
I hope I didn't destroy it with my summary.
I tried. You're good at those summaries. You're good at writing. I know write good. You'll find out here when we do Who Mourns. But go. Let's start with the trailer. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
Captain's log, stardate 3372.7. First Officer Spock seems to be under stress.
If I want anything from you, I'll ask for it.
If you don't get him to Vulcan within a week, 8 days at the outside, he'll die.
I await you.
Who is she?
My wife.
She chooses the challenge. They will choose thy champion.
This one.
This combat is to the dead.
Dead.
I feel like the trailer doesn't do the episode justice.
It doesn't. And the older, what was her name?
T'Pau.
She reminds me of like Bride of Dracula.
What? There was a Bride of Dracula?
I don't know. If there was, that she would remind me of it.
Yeah.
She just had that very Transylvanian. She chose the combat.
I see what you're talking about.
So, starting with the summary, Spock is growing restless, and he's getting irritated, and he rejects Nurse Soup's soup. I've seen this before. He's preparing for midterms. He must go home to prepare for the midterm test. That's the little teaser.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's short and sweet.
Yeah.
So,
I did want to mention that it was Plomeek soup. And I wondered, I wrote down when Nurse Soup was bringing it to Spock. I was like, I wonder if Spock would like Neelix's version better than her version. And then he like threw it all against the wall, and I'm like, well,
nope.
Maybe not.
Yeah. So this is why I called Chapel Nurse Soup, because of this episode. And you know, it was really sweet of her, you know, like, oh, Spock isn't eating, so I made him some Vulcan soup and then we find out that Spock is super crazy. I mean, like, firstly, right, McCoy is talking to the Cap. "So, Jim, when I suggested to Spock that it was time for his routine checkup, your logical and emotional first officer turned to me and said, 'You will cease to pry into my personal matters, Doctor, or I shall certainly break your neck.'" And then, you know, the bowl of soup.
Yep.
The bowl of soup comes flying out, and, you know, Spock is, like, pissed, you know. He says, "It is undignified for a woman to play servant to a man who is not hers." And I was like, wow, that is absolutely insane. That is not
so Spock. Anti-Spock, yeah.
Yeah, and she worked so hard making that soup. Come on.
Slaved over a space stove, to make that.
Spove.
She ordered those Plomeek special.
Yeah. Just for him, and then he just had to feed it to the wall.
Yep.
Oh, real quick, that reminds me. There was somebody at the wedding that made a homemade peach moonshine that was amazing.
Ooh, was it like the stuff that I brought over that one time?
No, it was like a lot better.
Oh.
Sorry.
Man, that stuff you brought over, like, just smelling it made me woozy.
I wish I could have tried it. You should have brought some back, Sam.
No, there wasn't a lot. No, okay. Very, very little. So.
All right, so Act 1. Kirk's like, "Yo, man, you can study on Altair 6. They have great libraries." Spock is like, "Nope," and almost stabs him. He even goes as far as changing the ship's course without telling Kirk. Vulcans take studying very seriously.
This is very G-rated for you, isn't it?
Yes, this is like Disney version. Synopsis.
So, I have to say, I really love Nimoy's acting.
Yeah, like...
I mean...
Like, maybe, most of the time, he's not really able to put emotion into play.
I think that's what makes this so entertaining, is he can actually let loose and play his character, Spock, kind of crazy. And maybe it's just that, like, huge marked difference that makes this so fun.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, there was that this time, and then that... that other one with the plants.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some people.
Paradise Lost?
Yeah.
Paradise Lost? Or something. God damn.
That's the books by John Milton.
Lost in Paradise.
Something. There was something with Paradise. This is other side of Paradise or something like that.
Yeah.
So when we saw Spock's room, I'm trying to remember exactly when that was. But was there like a disco bear or something behind him? There's like a bear with little lights going off in the background. Do any of y'all remember this?
I saw that. I don't know what it was. I was just like, what? But really, I was distracted because, I mean, I know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Why are Vulcans so uptight about this subject?
They're just, understand. It's embarrassing.
It is.
To them. They're not used to it.
It's part of life. You think, you know.
It'd be logical just to go with the flow.
Yeah, pretty much. Instead of like, don't want to talk about it. I'll kill you if we do.
It's interesting that they are embarrassed by this this ritual, and yet being prideful, isn't that an emotion?
Well, I don't think it's pride. I think
being embarrassed
I think
is
the reason why it's maybe not so much. Well, I guess in a way it could be embarrassment, but I think they get so uptight about it because it is a very illogical, uncontrollable time for them.
And they've built themselves up as being like, you know, we are the logic race.
Yeah, but who
knows? For Spock, you know, obviously it's something that bothers him because he tells the captain, you know, like, I need a rest. I'm asking you to accept that answer. Don't go into it further. Captain locked me away. I do not wish to be seen. Although it was kind of weird when he was just like, when he changed course from Altair to Vulcan.
When Kirk did, you know, or when...
No, when Spock did, and Spock didn't remember anything about it.
Yeah.
But,
It was kind of like, when you find that out, you're like, whoa.
Like, he didn't even remember doing it?
Well, no, when Kirk was talking to Sulu over the intercom, he said that Spock said to go and turn around, you're just like, whoa, that's not Spock
whatsoever. And he didn't recall anything, and that's why, you know, he's just like, Captain, lock me away. Also, we meet Chekov.
Yeah, we do.
Yay.
We meet Chekov, and I giggled a little bit when he was like, Vulcan.
Wessels.
I think I'm going to be spacesick. I think that was
that was a pretty good line, too.
Line. So, okay, I have to draw a parallel here. How do you... Because you've seen all of Voyager, so do you remember when
Tuvok
went through his
deal,
his bonfire?
Tuvok and Torek.
And Torek, yeah.
I liked the Torek episode better, right? And that was definitely something that I was waiting for because, you know, in regards to the Vulcans on the on Voyager, just because they were there for 7 years.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's the length.
So you know that it's coming up. You just don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
But when Tuvok went through it, I'm just kind of surprised at how... I mean, it was a good episode because, you know, they tried to go the holographic approach, and then you had, like, the people that are like, oh, holograms are bad. Your ship and blah, 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 blah. And so I thought, you know, they were going to turn off all the holographic systems, and Tuvok's going to be like, I can't... Ponfar the shit out of my wife, And that he was going to go, like, rage Vulcan and get rid of the buildup of hormones or whatever by, like, aggressing, you know, being aggressive toward those people. And it didn't happen. And I was like, wow, okay.
All like, right. the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they underplayed it for Tuvok. They did focus more on the holographic
issue. That side story.
Yeah, that little side story instead of Tuvok. But
Voyager seems to do that sometimes. I think Sam and I noticed it a couple of times too, where the B story tends to take precedence over the A story. Mm-hmm. It's like, why?
Well, we definitely noticed that in the trailers.
Yeah, the trailers at least. But yeah, I would say that I think I thought that Tuvok's little dark side was a lot better when he did the mind meld with Suter.
Oh,
like
God.
That whole thing was.
Oh, why'd you have to bring up Suter?
I know. I'm sorry, Sam. How did you guys like McCoy dropping the logic bomb on Spock?
Oh, which line are you talking about?
When Kirk orders Spock to report to the med bay.
Mm-hmm.
And the McCoy's like, you know, yield to the logic of the situation, like do the checkup because you're not right. When Spock just wanted to, I reported, I'm leaving now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then McCoy's like, no, yeah, that was given by the same guy that you know I work under.
Yeah.
You're getting your checkup done.
He logic the shit out of
them. Yep. And he submitted.
Oh, also, just because we first met Chekhov, I do want to note that, you know, this is going to be one of the few episodes where we see Chekhov and Sulu together. Just because Sulu's actually, you know, at this time was doing a film. And they brought in Chekhov to be a replacement for Sulu. So they usually alternate between the episodes, but there's like a handful of them here in this season where you're going to see them together.
Okay.
They also brought him in to get the younger crowd, specifically the girls.
He does kind of have like a Beatles-esque
haircut. Yeah, they were.
Really? I feel like he just is awkward.
In the second episode, you'll notice the really, really, really bad wig that he's wearing the entire time. So,
I guess moving on.
All right, Act 2. Uhura tries to contact Spock to let him know that they've changed their course back to Vulcan, but he was taking a break and playing guitar. This angers Spock, and he breaks his computer. Now he really needs to get to Vulcan to start studying. He explains to Kirk that he was appointed a study partner at birth, which is part of Vulcan custom. So while my synopsis is G-rated, the things I actually wrote down while I was watching it aren't so much.
Oh, interesting.
Because Act 2 starts off with him looking at a picture of his wife when she was, like, 7, right?
Yeah, it took me a while to get that. I was like, is that a picture of his... She looks like a goddamn kid. And then and then it clicked, you know, once we find out that they are, like, wed while they were young. Arranged marriage.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense, because that would be creepy.
Yeah.
So creepy.
But like, the way he was like, oh, turn off the computer. Like, nobody's supposed to see this.
Yeah.
And he was like,
It's funny how that happens, and then, like, you know, later she's on the fucking view screen for everybody to see.
Yeah, yeah.
But as an adult, you know, he's not lusting at a picture of a child.
Yeah, I know. He's contemplating. But, like, why do Vulcans do this? This is stupid.
I thought he was contemplating, like, I wonder what she looks like now that she's older.
I just thought it was kind of creepy. Because, I mean, think about it. He's being filled with, well, according to McCoy, adrenaline. But, you know, it's hormones and things that make him really angry and testy. But... Anywho's, I still find the this act is really interesting just because, you know, we see how awkward it makes Spock to discuss this whole thing. I mean, you know, McCoy does the checkup and he talks to the captain and he's just like, well, here's the deal. He knows what it is, but he's as tight-lipped as an Aldebaran shellmouth. I probably butchered that.
Yeah, that's right.
I butchered shellmouth. But he, you know, comments that even Vulcans don't talk about this amongst each other.
God, what's wrong with him?
That's yeah, crazy. Right? And then, you know, Kirk is just trying to talk to him because he's his captain and he's his friend, right? And, you know, you see Spock trying to tiptoe around the issue. Like, it's Vulcan biology. And, you know, of course Kirk knows what it's all about because that's on his mind all the time. Oh, you mean reproduction. It is a really, really awkward conversation.
Yeah. Did y'all not laugh? Because if I'm quoting this right, it says it has to do with biology. You mean biology of Vulcans? Like, yes.
Yeah. No, cats.
But
I mean, they both have bark penises, but whatever.
It was interesting. I liked the preconception that the captain had, you know, when Spock mentioned, like, how do you figure we chose mates? And the captain's like, well,
like anybody else.
I assume like what Vulcans do, just logic. It involves logic. And then we learn that it doesn't, which is, I mean, maybe to a certain respect it does because it is an arranged marriage by the parents.
Yeah.
So, but
it's
but
not.
Yeah.
It's not very logical because people change, especially if you know there. I was about to say seafaring. If they're spacefaring and going and experiencing new things, they're going to change and find other people that they're attached to. It's not very logical. I feel, in my opinion.
Well, maybe it's logical for the families. Who knows if the Vulcans practice any sort of, you know, dowry.
That's true.
Ritual, yeah. Or you know, maybe there's some politics involved to help make their families stronger. You know, by joining the two.
The Queen of France.
Yeah, and you know, in societies today that still practice the arranged marriage. I mean, you talk to the couples of the arranged marriage; they don't think it's. A lot of them don't think it's bad. I mean, I'm sure it's like 50-50, like, oh, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
I love the Western idea of finding the person I love and being with them, but there's a lot of, on the other hand, there's I've heard or read interviews where it's like, you, I've learned to become his or her best friend, and I think, you know, you they think it's a good thing, or it works for them. It works for some people.
Yeah,
I guess is what I'm trying to say. I mean, you can't.
That's true.
It sounds weird and illogical, but I'm sure there is logic to it. I mean, humans have done it.
Well, and also like this whole thing seems to be centered around their tradition. So
yeah.
even though Vulcans have evolved to a point where logic dictates what they do, they still understand where they came from.
Mm-hmm. Which so. Apparently is caverns where they hatched. I mean, it's like, seriously, Spock just used a salmon reference for his people.
Yeah, I thought that was a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're Earth's
but you're not
salmon.
A fish, Mr. Spock. You're... No, nor am I a man. I am a Vulcan.
Yeah, I'm Vulcan. But...
I am part Vulcan, part salmon.
But I can't merge those two together. But... this act really has some just good points. Like, I really like that awkward conversation. I like how uncomfortable this makes Spock. I love it when he crushes that rubber monitor. Like, it's so fucking hilarious. He just, like, walks up to it and he's like, and you just see it, like, crumple.
You know what it reminds me of? It's because he was playing his little Vulcan lute right beforehand. But in Eddie Izzard's famous stand-up comedy, he was making fun of Hitler because he was trying to paint. Yeah. He can't get the trees, and everyone must die. So it's like the same thing, but with the guitar. Also, there was another quote that I really, really liked, and it was something Kirk said, and it was just kind of the kind of guy Kirk is, and he's like, "I owe him my life, you know, a dozen times over. Isn't that worth a career?" When he was deciding on when he actually learned that. Spock had to go to Vulcan or he was going to die. He's like, yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was one of the lines I wrote down as well, mm-hmm. because I mean, it's true.
Yep.
It is true. But, like right after that, didn't Nurse Soup just break into his room just
pretty
to
much.
Watch him sleep?
Yep.
It was really weird.
Yeah, like, oh, I have to tell him the good news, but he's like, sleeping.
Was there no privacy? Like,
that would piss me off.
She's like, I used my nurse orders to get through the door.
Yeah, but you know, he woke up and he was all like, "You should make me some more soup sometime."
That was weird.
And she was like, "Oh, okay, I'll do that." And like, I'm thinking about it, and it's like, you know, seriously, if I made my boyfriend a sandwich and he slapped it out of my hand or threw it against the wall, I'd be like, "Fuck you!"
And like, go make
your own goddamn sandwich.
Go make me another one.
It's like, Is this a trap? I think this is a trap. You just want to throw more soup against the wall.
Or maybe at her face. But this chapel got kind of creepy there. Like, I think she was gonna molest him.
That whole scene was kind of creepy because he's like, "I had a dream that you were about to tell me something."
Yeah,
and
I think
like, what the fuck?
Least favorite part.
Yeah,
in this episode. What do you call it? Oh, other good lines, right? So Spock is talking to the captain, and he says, "Captain, there is a thing that happens to Vulcans at this time, almost an insanity, which you would no doubt find distasteful." And Kirk's response is beautiful. "Will I? You've been most patient with my kinds of madness." And we know Kirk's kinds of madness. We've seen him do some stupid-ass shit.
Do you think Kirk really did get lobotomized?
This brain magnet thing, I want to try that out.
Yeah, let me do that with a woman that harbors feelings for me and is kind of crazy.
Oh, here's some robots. We should. I'm a robot. I'm a Kirkbot.
Kirkbot, but yeah, no, he's. Or hey, let me beam down with all my first officers.
Yeah.
Which actually really is a recurring thing, except for Next Gen, less so there, but. But yeah, I thought that was really good. And I was like, well, there is some truth to that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of truth to that. Mm-hmm. But then we meet T'Pring as an adult. Right?
She reminds me of Lana.
Lana?
From Archer.
Oh. Really?
A little bit.
Wow. Oh, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. No, it's so we meet T'Pring, right? A lot of makeup. Mm-hmm. With a super echoey voice. A
lot of hairspray.
Kneel before me or suffer.
Yeah. Did anyone feel like it was weird and super echoey? I feel like it was the audio version of the jelly cam.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
Vulcans don't need it fuzzy. They just need the echo of whatever.
Makes it sound like they're in the cave where they were born.
Yeah. Where they spawn. Like, yeah. Beautiful American salmon, but they're not man, they're not salmon, they're Vulcan. But everyone's reaction was wonderful.
Yeah.
Who's that, Spock? Well, it's my wife. And like, you see Chapel, and she's like,
what?
And then Kirk looks to McCoy. Soup. McCoy looks to someone else, and they're like, you know, bam, 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 bam. Let's just show the whole entire. Everyone in that room, like, looking shocked because Spock is married.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, I never really would have thought of Spock as being a married man.
Really?
Just from seeing his actions.
Or how, like, selfless he is.
Yeah, I wouldn't see him being in this job if he were married.
Well, to be fair, Neil... To be fair, Neil, you did see the Star Trek movies before you saw the series, so that colors your vision a little bit.
Yeah.
See, I figure it would absolutely be normal. I mean, if Con Farr occurs like every 7 years, then why not take a job like this?
Yeah, but then you gotta make sure you're home for those couple of days or whatever. Yeah.
Well, fortunately, he's got enough vacation time accrued. Pretty sure you confirmed that earlier in the episode.
Yep.
This is one of the. I think this is the.
They should just let him take a shuttle. Like, just go.
Yeah, just pawn far the shit out of yourself. Go.
Like in the motion picture where he leaves Vulcan. This is the I feel this is the quintessential episode where the crew actually feels a little bit more like a family.
Yeah.
Because Sulu tells Chekhov, like, you better just set.
Just go ahead and plot the course.
Yeah, and like, then...
Get
and
ready
then,
for it.
Yeah, and then when Kirk, you know, says the set of course, like, already done. And Kirk's like, yeah, that's my crew.
They know what's up.
So, I mean, from this, I see everybody being a... Well, the primary officers being a family, starting to be a family.
Yeah. All right, you guys got anything else for Act 2?
We're about to see Spock babies.
Yeah! All right, Spock is nervous and invites his best wingman down to meet his study partner. Things seem to be going well until T'Pring forces Spock to fight for the right to study with her. She chooses Kirk to fight for her, and the schoolyard rumble begins.
I love the music in this episode, music especially at the start of Act 3. Holy shit. So good.
I was actually really touched when Spock invited McCoy as well as Kirk. Because much as those two fight, it's almost like a brotherly, like, you know.
Well, this
exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Punching shoulders. And, yeah.
This confirms it, too. Because, like, before, like, there were some mean things that were said before.
Yeah.
But now it's definitely like, oh, they really do kind of enjoy each other.
Mm-hmm.
In a non-sexual way.
But here in this episode, I think what's most intriguing is we actually get to learn more about an alien race.
Yeah.
How the Vulcans work. That's what does it for me.
And the landscape looks amazing.
Oh, landscape, and then there is drama. There is a lot of drama in this episode, I feel. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy it more because you do learn about another species and their rituals. So I think this is where they're actually like, marriage is arranged by parents when we're like 7 years old. And then this is the point where like the light switch flipped on for me, and I was like, oh, that explains the child photo that he was ogling. Woo, that would have been creepy. But I was kind of confused here, and if you guys know a little bit more about this, please, please enlighten me. But if Spock and T'Pring were betrothed at the age of 7, and Ponfar occurs every 7 years, then when do Vulcans become sexually mature? Because Spock looks way, way, way older.
It's every 7 years after they hit puberty.
Puberty,
right?
Yeah.
So, but where's puberty for Vulcans?
According to Star Trek III, it's about the same time as humans.
So we'll go with like 14.
Yeah, something like that.
So,
and he's a lot older than that, yeah.
Yeah, he is a lot older than that. So I'm not, like, I'm just kind of confused, you know, as to why.
Now is the time.
Now is the time where they're actually, like, completing their marriage.
It's because.
Or completing this ritual.
Spock now can't just jerk off. He has to go home. To do that,
so they reach puberty at, we'll just go with 14, right? Every 7 years,
mm-hmm.
and the Ponfar doesn't really hit until they're like, I don't even know how old Spock is. We'll go with 100.
I think he's younger than that.
He probably is, but it's just kind of
off.
Yeah, like what did he do?
Confusing.
Before then?
Yeah, like is there a ritual, or maybe, I mean, we know with Tuvok that there is meditation that can go on to control it, but do they hit a certain age where it becomes absolutely uncontrollable?
I think that's what he said in the episode, was that, you know, the ancient urges are too strong. Like, I remember him saying something about that.
See, you'd think it would work the other way around, or at least we know it does with humans, right? You know, the younger, more virile and just right, so many hormones, and then it lessens. But I actually think that in is it Voyager, where I think Tuvok says it actually increases,
mm-hmm.
for Vulcans.
Yep.
So
well,
it's interesting.
It's also like there's a lot of theories going on about it, but the one that makes sense to me is that one of the reasons is because they are in so much control of their emotions, and because they have such violent emotions, like, this is the one time where they get to
explode.
Yeah. And just and
ba-dum-tsh.
And let all that out in some sort of manner. And then they're able to go back and control it again. So
yeah.
So when they actually get down on the planet and they start the ritual, and Spock goes up to ring the gong, I was like, is he summoning Godzilla? I mean, it sounds like something from one of the Godzilla movies.
You mean King Kong?
Okay, it is King Kong. Okay, see? It just, I don't know. I had a flash of that.
Godzilla can't be controlled. I'm sorry.
But also, Sam, I think you mentioned this before, too. The Romulan helmets mm-hmm. returned.
Mm-hmm. They sure did.
The banana peels.
The guards with the bells. Their helmets are the same ones from the I can't remember the episode name, but the one with the Romulans and the ship that mm-hmm. Kirk was battling.
Yep,
they're exactly the same except really like silver. So
interesting. So we meet T'Pau.
It's amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah. And she doesn't like humans and like. Spock has so much faith in his buddies, the Cap and the Doc, because he's like, yeah, I promised my life or something like that. So literally his life is at stake. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it was prior to, but here, I mean, their behavior definitely puts Spock at stake. And I'm like, wow, Spock is being completely illogical because... human behavior is completely illogical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. But, you know, speaking of T'Pau, you know, since we introduced her, apparently T'Pol and Enterprise
yep.
was supposed to be T'Pau.
Yep.
But they changed it because that meant they would have had to pay the author that the wrote Amok Time.
Royalties.
And so they're like, yeah, we're not going to pay royalties on that. So they changed her to T'Pol.
But
apparently T'Pau does show up.
Whatever,
yes.
It works.
In Enterprise?
She does. Yes, she does. You need to stop researching this stuff while you're watching Enterprise. You're going to ruin it. Yeah.
Look, I'm not... I have ruined so many episodes. It's just like, oh, wow, this species is so fascinating. Let me read... Oh, no!
Yeah, I've done that with Dresden Files once, and I'm like, I'm not doing that again, so...
Yeah, but it's so hard. Like,
yeah.
The internet makes things so much easier, right? And like for me, I'm so fascinated by the alien species that we're seeing in the show. So that's the first thing I look up. If there's an alien species, like, why are they doing that? Or why is this? If I don't feel like the show's explained it well enough, and then, boop, look it up, spoiler. Well, thank you, Memory Alpha.
You have to wait. Like, keep watching the episodes. They'll explain it.
I can't. We live in a world of now.
Of convenience.
Instant gratification.
Pretty much.
And I wallow in it because I am a millennial and that is what millennials do.
Wallow.
So, I'm just
going to. Except I have a job.
So, I'm going to bring this up. While Spock was about to ring the gong and the guards mm-hmm. were around or whatever, and he's like not looking his best. Like, he looks like he could snap at any minute. I'm surprised he didn't snap with all the jingling of the bells.
Like, dude, I wrote that down, too. I was like, I can see how all this jingling would cause a blood fever.
I know, right?
T'Pring was... No. She's like, no.
No Kunut Khalifi.
Yes. No Kunut Kamehameha.
Kunut Khalifi.
Okay, Khaleesi.
Khaleesi.
Melikilikimaka?
Yes. But yeah, it was kind of weird because he just kind of like staggered over to a wall and started murmuring to himself. I'm like, is he summoning an Elder One or what is he doing now? How does this work?
Oh God, yeah. Can you imagine a Vulcan Elder One? That'd be terrifying.
Oh, wow, so logically powerful. Yeah. So I would like to point out as well that T'Pring is a total bitch.
I didn't want to say it.
Four-letter word for that. But I think that might be even a little bit too much for our mature audience rating.
That she was a cunt?
Yeah. I was trying to be nice. You know the Brits drop that word like it's nothing?
Yep.
And then here she's like, ugh.
Taboo.
But no, she is very much a cunt. And
she wants what she wants. And she is going to do what it takes to get that.
But see, here's the thing, because we learned this later. She's wanting to go after another man, and it was originally intended for her to have that man fight Spock in this tradition, or you know what I'm talking about?
Ritual combat.
But then she's all like, "Oh, I choose that one, your best friend."
Well, think about it. If you think about it from a logical standpoint, yes, Stan, I think his name was.
Yes, Stan
could fight. I think,
but he had the chance of dying.
He had the chance of dying, but also. The Kirk, because the air is thin, won't be able to fight as good.
She knew it.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's still a bitchy thing to do.
It is a cunt move to do, but if you think about it from a logical standpoint, it's...
That's like the great move in the chess.
You gotta think about it. Wow, here's an opportunity.
She does explain it, but I was like, wow, that really sucks. I mean, what would happen if she chose the Doctor instead? You think Spock would be like, all right.
Probably. Well, he did say he'll have to... I think we're getting into Act 4 at this point.
Well, kind of, sort of. I mean, McCoy, you know, warns Kirk, and then Kirk's like, well, he's my friend. I'll accept it. And then he's like, oh, whoops. Well, Spock's to the death.
Spock did say he'll do what he has to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, oh, and that was a really good line that he delivered in regards to that. You know, like, I burn to pow. My eyes are flame. My heart is flame. Right.
It's better than the one when they're on the ship and they're like, "Who is touched and never touched? Who is?"
She was, and never far away.
Yeah.
It's like whatever.
Yeah.
Get a room.
But before we get into Act 4, I just want to bring up the line that T'Pau said, like right before the battle. It's just like something, something, something. Possession of the woman T'Pring. Yeah. This is the second line I've heard. At least the second line I've heard so far in this episode that objectifies a woman.
It does, but it also gives the woman specific rights to do what she just did. Like it's not just pure wholesale of the lady.
I understand
like,
that. It's just the way.
Yeah, the way it's worded.
I mean, instead of like a battle for T'Pring's affection.
No, she will be property of the whoever.
Yeah. It's possession of.
Yep.
So, and I don't know if the writers did that intentionally. I mean, we had Spock's line earlier with Chapel. You know, it's not right for you to serve soup to a man that's not yours, or something like that. I guess in a way it kind of objectifies men.
In this sort of way, in the way that they've written both of those lines, they've already established how the. The Vulcan. Oh God, I can't think. Culture exists. I mean, they're already showing that you know, they both own each other technically. So,
yeah. I don't know. It feels like it might be a play on the human or traditional Christian marriage.
Yeah.
Traditions. Anywho, I think we should move on to Act
4. Alright, Act 4. Spock appears to kill Kirk. Oh, no. Spock is so despaired that he doesn't feel like studying anymore and congratulates T'Pring on being stone cold. After Spock orders Bones to arrest him, Kirk shows up and lets him know that it was all faked. You would think there would be some sort of diplomatic fallout when the head Vulcan lady sees that Kirk's alive again, but for now, Spock is exempt from testing.
Yeah, so. I was kind of thinking about that, too. Like, you know.
That wasn't me, T'Pau. That was Negakirk.
Negakirk! Oh, my God. That was so fun. Anywho, so there's really none. Listeners, if you haven't seen this episode, you need to. Because there really isn't a lot that goes on in Act 4. It is just, like, straight-up action.
Yeah.
You know, we've got Spock and Kirk fighting within like 2 seconds. There's like Kirk nipples.
Yep, there goes Kirk's shirt.
He almost lost his nipples.
He almost did, and it was so bloody.
Yeah.
But you know, there's some. I don't know why I thought this was so funny. First, we had the ripped shirt, and then like I don't know who was holding the weapon, whether or not it was Spock or Kirk, but someone, like, tapped the weapon against a column and the blade just fell off.
Yeah.
Bink! Yeah. It was Spock.
Well, I think it's to show how strong he is. I mean, he also broke the gong.
That's true.
By tapping it. Yeah.
Oh, see, I missed that. I just thought it was due to shitty props. is like the first thing that came to mind.
No.
Now, if Spock had, I don't know, bent the metal on the thing like he did his computer monitor, like just crush it, then I think that would be a sound like show of strength. But you know, it just looked like he tapped it like pink, and then it went.
He probably didn't want it like flying off anywhere to hurt somebody.
And then, so we got this epic battle with epic music.
The Lerpas are amazing.
The Lerpas?
Yeah.
That's what they're... Bring first the Lerpa.
There's, in STO, the first, or maybe it was this... No, it was the first. The first Christmas that they had in-game was also the same time that SWTOR was coming out. And to celebrate... the STO team made what they call Nanopulse, Batless, and Lerpas. So basically what it was the blade part of the of both weapons was...
lightsabery.
Basically lightsabery.
Okay, so the weapon itself, the one that they're using at the beginning, is called the Lerpa.
Right. The one with the big...
The staff with the club and the little crescent blade.
Yes,
that's the Lerpa.
And it's awesome because I think in last year and in this year you can get a purple Lerpa.
Purple Lerpa, doopity doo.
I feel like Lerpas look like they should be like this, those Rock'em Bop'em clans. Like you should just set them on the base and then just smack it and it slices back towards you.
No, Vulcan Gladiators.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know. So what McCoy does here is great.
Yeah.
That is thinking on his feet, I feel. But, you know, Kirk kind of passes out and she's like...
He's dead. No need to question my judgment. I'm a doctor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before that, he's like, you know, Kirk's struggling, and McCoy's hey, look, let me even the playing field. Let me give him this. It'll help him, breathe the thin air here. Yeah. Right? And then, you know, during that point, T'Pau's like, the air is the air, you know, being kind of bitchy. Yeah.
What's going to be done?
Yeah. So the doc does that, Kirk gets back up, he starts fighting, and you'd think by the look on T'Pring's face, you know, there is no stronger aphrodisiac than murder, because she is, super excited for a Vulcan. Like, you could tell. Like, that placid look just looks slightly placid lusty. But the captain is dead. He's finished. You know, he's just passed out.
It's lucky that Spock choked him and didn't, burn his face into the...
Or, like, break his neck. Like,
bite his nose off.
Because, you know, Spock had no idea that plan was going on.
Yeah.
And then McCoy, you know, steps in. And I think this is pretty funny, right? So McCoy steps in and he's like, he's finished. He's dead, right? Mm-hmm. And then, and it's like, well, you know, if this is a normal part of Vulcan ritual, you'd think that the Vulcans would have their own physician on hand to determine whether or not someone's actually dead.
Nope.
So I just thought it was weird. But, you know, after Spock kills the captain, we're going to put kills in air quotes, right? he's fine. He's like, all right, well... This is going to happen next.
He's
go back
related.
To the ship.
Yeah.
I'll be there in a minute, and I'm going to turn myself in. And then I was like, wait, doesn't he still need a mate? I guess it only takes a few minutes.
Well, it's the release of the whatever.
The blood fever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like, you know, when he speaks to T'Pring, and she's talking about, like, her logic, her calculations on this, I was like, wow, that's pretty good. And then, you know, before that, I was like, oh, you're lying, because she says she doesn't want to be consort to who is practically a legend. And I was like, are you fucking serious? I mean, is that not what she said? She's like, I don't want to be with someone that's like you, because you're well-known, you're renowned.
Part of that, too, is that she was like, I want Stan. I felt, you know, she was attracted to Stan. So.
Yeah, well, but I'm saying that her saying that she doesn't want to be with Spock because he's a near legend is complete bullshit. And saying that just to try to make Spock feel a little bit better.
Maybe.
So, like, trying to let him down nicely?
Yeah, pretty much.
She could honestly feel that way, too.
Maybe. I don't know. Feel...
She was wearing a lot of bling, so...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I just feel that was pretty fake. I feel like that scene or that portion, that line of dialogue would have been perfectly fine without the consort to a near legend line. Like it still would have been okay if she hadn't said that. I mean, she still would have been a bitch. She just now sounds like a lying bitch instead of a cold-hearted logical bitch,
which is worse.
Yeah, pretty much. But,
So do any of y'all think if Kirk could actually breathe the thin air, do you think he could have won with his Kirk Fu?
No.
No.
No?
I mean, it is fact that Vulcans are stronger than man.
Well, right, but Kirk Fu is pretty...
Kirk Fu is like a Joker card.
Yeah, but then, you know, you'd have him try to double ham fist Spock would step aside and be like, pinch, done.
No, he wouldn't pinch him. He would punch him.
Well, assuming that Spock is all blood raging again, probably he'd punch him. But I think in a normal battle, you know, with normal Spock and normal Kirk, and normal, we'll go with ship conditions since they both can function on the ship, I think Spock would take Kirk out, not a problem.
Maybe.
And I think he would do it in the least violent way possible.
See, but here's the thing. See, Spock would try to logic Kirk's moves, but with Kirk Fu, I don't think he could do that. And then Kirk might be able to get him down.
Maybe. It would be close.
I feel that it is incredibly unlikely, just based off of Spock's strength alone.
Also, neck pinch.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Spock does have that.
Anywho's. Did anyone like Spock's smile?
It's always good to see Vulcan smile.
So like here's the whole ending, and I love how these endings are so wrapped up nicely. Mm-hmm. You know, the doctor's like, Spock, Spock like keeps interrupting, like, No, we need to go turn myself in, I did something wrong. And then the captain walks by and is like, I think you should ask for the captain's permission first. And then Spock's like, smiles, like, he's thinking, oh, captain! God. And then he looks around and McCoy's like, and he stops. and then we see Nurse Soup, who looks like she's going to sneak into his room and molest him again.
They catch her, though.
Oh, you don't have a wife now.
How about some soup?
Yeah.
Nurse Soup.
Rock crackers.
What kind of name? Yes, I'm Soup. Nurse Soup.
That's gonna be the name of my unborn child. Wait, by unborn I mean I don't have a child, but they're not born yet. Maybe my future child would have been the best phrase. God, that was awkward.
What's a little bit?
Anywho's. So apparently T'Pau pulled some favors as well. You guys catch that at the end?
How so?
Yeah, well, they were going to get in trouble for not going to Altair. Then, you know, retroactively, you know, the Starfleet got a message from T'Pau and was like, oh, well, you guys are excused. And I was like, did T'Pau feel guilty or something about...
I think if nothing else, she respected what they did.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was pretty cool of T'Pau. And then, you know, of course, McCoy's like, man, you smiled, Spock, you smiled. You didn't, you had emotions.
What do you say? Like, I was just, you know, my perfectly logical relief that, you know, Captain was okay.
Yeah.
And McCoy's like in a pig's eye or something like that.
Oh, speaking of T'Pau, apparently that actress could not make the Vulcan salute by herself. So at the very end, they actually taped her fingers.
Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that.
Yep, and they to hide it, they had her like place her hand flat onto the armrest of her chair where it was like, so they, it would be out of view, and all she had to do is raise her hand to, and it was already in salute.
Yeah, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's a me, it's a pal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you guys would you guys rate it?
Oh man, this is a 5 for me. I just like it. There's action. There's Kirk nipples. There's xenobiology. There's good
weird
music.
Vulcan romance stuff.
Nah, and then Vulcan cunts.
Yeah.
It's just nice. I think I feel like season 2 started strong with this one.
I also gave it a 5, even though the one beef I have with it is like I would have thought Spock would have been like kind of upset that they just made a mockery of the Vulcan.
Well, that and that
Maka, whatever.
That Kunat Khalifi. That and what you mentioned with the whole like you would think that there'd be some
sort of like hey
political
wait a minute.
Fallout. Yeah.
But that's about it. Everything else was great.
I give it a 5 just for the music because you can't beat that.
Wait.
Jingle bells?
You know what's great about that piece of music is it is referenced so many times. So many times since this episode.
Like in
Cable Guy. Like
in the Cable Guy.
Okay.
They did it in Futurama. Oh, and you know what's so good about watching... Sorry, because Futurama is like one of my favorite shows ever, and I do have a tendency to power watch it every like year. Like, the more I watch of Star Trek, the more references I get in Futurama. Like, they reference Janeway, Captain Janeway.
In
Futurama.
Where?
It's actually in one of the newer episodes that came out.
Oh, okay. I'll have to watch
it. Yeah, it's on the Netflix. But I thought, I was just like, I get it! So it's really good. I mean, the piece of song itself, like I guess getting back to the main point, is really good. Highly referenced. Or, you know, we see it a lot or hear it a lot.
All right, what do we got next?
Oh, wow. We have got... I'm not sure how to actually pronounce it, right? But it's Who Mourns For... I thought it was Adonis.
That's...
But it's not.
Adonais?
Or I was thinking all Frenchy Adonois. I know they pulled it from a poem or a short story or biography from a poet. I'll have to pull it back up to see. But I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's not Adonis.
That's how they say it in the episode, though.
No,
did
they?
Don't.
They don't.
No.
Oh, that's right. It's Apollo.
It's Apollo.
Yeah. Adonis isn't a god either, I don't think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Well, we can figure out godly things later.
Trailer.
Captain's log, stardate 3468.1.
What in the name of...
Am I seeing things?
Do not bring that one. The one with the pointed ears. Welcome to Olympus, Captain Kirk. Let the lesson begin.
To us, mister.
Oh, God, that is terrible.
You know God does, mister.
Yeah, and is it just me, or did they make Apollo look like he was molesting Carolyn with the
whip. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
That was a really bad. I think that might be the worst Star Trek trailer we've seen thus far.
That didn't even go into any of the, like, that showed all the action and none of the reason why he was actually doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, which is kind of a dumb reason why he's actually doing all of it, but, you know, we'll get to that later. So, I'm not, listeners, as you already know, I'm not as good at summaries as my cohorts here, but I'll try my best. Right, so we begin with a flirty Scotty and a discussion of women in the workplace, when all of a sudden it's a hand, a giant hand, that grabs our beloved Enterprise. Egads. That's it. That is the intro. There is a giant hand, and apparently, you know, per the trailer, Chekhov is like, what?
Well, before the hand even shows up, I was like, is this going to be one of those, oh, this is exactly like Planet Earth type of things, only I basically think it's another Earth type planet. But it wasn't.
Like 60s Earth?
Kind of, but something to tie it back to Earth. Maybe not.
Well, they kind of did.
Yeah, that's true. Just not in the way I was expecting.
I was really surprised that Scotty was like, would you like to get a cup of coffee? And then he's like, oh, yeah. So he just like stares at her for like
That seems day. So un-Scotty-like. I mean, to me, Scotty's woman is the Enterprise.
You
can only stick your dick into so many Jeffries tubes.
They're really big, too.
That's pretty impressive if he can do that, you know. Fill a Jeffries tube. Point is, you know, even the captain realizes how awkward this is, right? Because he looks to, I think he looks to McCoy, and he's like, can you get that excited from a cup of coffee? And then, you know, McCoy is like, yeah, I'm not sure I like that, Jim. And then, you know, he talks about Scotty flirting with Carolyn, and she's like, well, I don't think she's going to realize that he's right for him. And then this, you know, they talk about women in the workplace. What is the line? She'll find the right man and she'll leave. And then the captain's like,
I feel like I'm losing a first officer. I am losing a first officer.
Yeah, something like that. I like to think of it not so much as losing an officer as gaining. Actually, I'm losing an officer. And I was like, wow.
Because, you know, women, they go to, I'm going to say space college to learn everything about space. And then, you know, as soon as they get married, they're just going to forget all that. Like, this is not important.
Well, you know, to be fair, this I'm pretty sure this was a common occurrence in the 60s when this was filmed. You know, you still had the nuclear family. The father was a supporter. The woman stayed at home.
They're volatile. You shake them up, they'll explode.
Something like that. So, fun fact, that hand you see, that is Gene Roddenberry.
Really?
Yeah, that's Gene Roddenberry's hand.
That's awesome.
Well, the hand you see in the new stuff isn't Gene Roddenberry's hand. But in the old stuff...
I haven't seen the old stuff. I didn't even think about that. I just figured... Sam... I'm trying to share some neat, interesting facts, and you just keep destroying me.
No, well, I'm just saying that, like, okay, personally,
it's not Gene Roddenberry.
I was actually really impressed with the graphics for that they redid. Honestly,
yeah.
So
me
that's
too.
Not Gene Roddenberry. How did it look in the original?
I can show you later.
I guess I'll have to see it later. So that one is Gene Roddenberry's hand. They didn't like, you know, spice it up and turn it green.
I think it was green in the other one, too. I'd have to watch it again. I don't really remember.
But anywho, it's this giant hand. Oh, my God. Everyone kind of freaks out about it, right? Sulu's like, Captain, that thing's a giant hand.
What the fuck?
And then Kirk is like, what is it, Spock? A hand? And I'm like, really, guys? Really? And then, like, seriously, Spock goes out of his way to say, it is not a hand.
A
it is
flesh.
A shield. Of energy.
It's not
it
flesh and blood.
Not flesh. It is energy. And I was
it's
like,
so weird.
That was really weird. Like, it's a hand. No, it's not. It's a hand.
Like Chekhov was chiming in on that too.
Yeah. Oh goodness. But yeah. So I guess moving on to Act 1, because really, that was the whole intro, giant hand.
Yep.
So this unknown force has stopped the Enterprise in her tracks, and Spock makes damn sure that everyone knows that it's an energy field and not a goddamn hand made of living tissue. Then all of a sudden, there's a giant laurel-laden head, and it's a very talkative head, which talks about his pride for the crew and coerces them into staying.
Sort of.
No, he just coerces them into staying. I mean, we know how it's going to turn out because this is a television show and we need our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's pretty much what he does. I mean, the hands got the ship. They're trying to escape. And then we hear, like, the most erotic thing Sulu is ever going to say in this show.
Yep.
Applying full thrust, sir. No response, Captain. She's stuck tight. I wish I could do a better Takei impression. But it was really good. If you can get that sound clip in there, Sam, it's just... I don't know why it made me... I thought it was funny.
Yeah, the music in this one is pretty menacing, too. And at this point, I was thinking, oh god, this is going to be like the Corbomite maneuver all over again.
You know,
they're actually talking to each other at this.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't play the sound clip from Corbomite, you know, the da 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 da. It sounded kind of like, you know, it was what influenced the music in this episode. But, you know, I'm surprised I didn't hear it, because we heard that quite a bit in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I don't know. I'm going to be honest, guys. I'm not a big fan of this episode to begin with. So, yeah. it's just kind of weird. It moves really weird. I guess we can talk about that later, but, you know. I thought it was funny. A curious development on Scanner 5-7, eh? Oh, it's a giant head.
Is that a giant head? Is that a giant head in space?
Yeah.
It's
and then Spock's like, no, it's not flesh and blood. It's energy. It's a giant head.
I've never seen anything like this.
And that guy that plays the giant head, the actor that plays this character, does he not look constipated? He looks really weird. And he looks like he's taking this acting job a little too seriously.
Yeah, especially later on when you see him on the ground.
Yeah. And then, but he does make a jab at Spock, which we heard in the trailer. You know, he reminds me of Pan, and Pan always bored me.
He's like, racist against Vulcans is what he is.
Yeah, I guess so. But Spock's response is really good.
Hmm.
You know, verbose, isn't he? And then, you know, Kirk's like, oh, are you insulted? And he's like, insults are effective only when emotion is present.
I feel like Apollo didn't answer any of their questions.
Why should he? He's a fucking god.
Yeah, god. But, you know, it was really funny in a Chekhov's response. You know, he's like, I am Apollo. And he's like, and I am the Tsar of all of Russia. I'm really bad at impressions. If anyone wants to try a Chekhov voice, go for it with that line. But
I can only do nuclear Wessels.
Yeah, Wessels.
So before they get transported down, though, like, Kirk seems pretty testy. Like, normally, whenever dealing with something like this, like, yeah, he's agitated, but he's still trying to, I don't know, like, be a little more diplomatic a little bit. I don't know. He just seemed, like, really angry today when he was talking with them before they got transported down.
Well,
because he's got his ship.
Yeah.
Giant hand has his ship.
And at this point, right, isn't it like, oh, you're going to listen to me or I'm going to crush your ship?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Threatened, basically.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
like,
that's not
like
something
said,
Kirk takes too well.
It's not any captain doesn't take too well to that. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
point,
it's his ship and he's responsible for everyone on there. That's I'd be pissed.
430 people, I think he said.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. It's just kind of a small ship if you think about Voyager.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But, so here we learn, right, that the giant head is actually Apollo, whom visited Earth 5,000 years ago with the rest of the... Is it Greek? Is Apollo Greek?
Greek pantheon, yeah.
Yeah, Greek pantheon, and all he wants is to be worshipped. He just wants some love, people. But Apollo...
Create some people.
Yeah, right? But Apollo, you know, is just a jackass and then wields his power to fuse phasers, smite people, cause general shenanigans, and seduces Carolyn. Pretty much, you know, divinely cock-blocking Scotty. But you know, the crew at this point learns that the energy Apollo uses is finite. It's limited. And they decide to antagonize him in the hopes of weakening and overpowering him. But good old Carolyn just fucks things up. Jeez, women. Am I right?
She redeems herself.
Yeah. So there is a lot of stuff that goes on in Act 2.
I thought it was funny when he's like, oh, you don't find me a threat. I'll show you by making myself you.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Don't look up his tunic.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Badumcha. I actually typed that down and I didn't say it. I just totally realized I forgot my own pun. I'm terrible.
I liked when he was, I think this may have been before or earlier too, when he was like, no sad faces. It's like, dude, you just nearly crushed her ship.
You're right. I totally remember hearing that and I was like, what the fuck kind of bullshit is that? What is wrong with you? No sad faces. It's a time to be jolly. Like, no.
Seriously, dude.
He's now demanding worships, and apparently the lessons begin.
Mm-hmm.
By growing huge.
Also, I'd like to point out, right? You can tell, like, immediately he's crushing or he likes Carolyn.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because of Vaseline Cam.
He pretty much, like, gives her a compliment, like, you are so beautiful or pretty or something. And then you look on Carolyn's face, like, the camera zooms in, and she's got this derpy looking, like, oh, he thinks I'm pretty. Look. And it's just like, I mean, obviously she's an intelligent young woman because she, you know, does a report earlier on and, oh, you're tired, coffee, blah, 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 blah. But someone tells her she's pretty. She's like, oh, look at me.
I'm a girl. Somebody call me pretty.
So this is going to sound really sexist, but is it not strange to everybody else how the historians are always women? Because if you remember in the Khan episode...
You're right.
It's the same thing all over again. Like, what the hell?
In Space Seed?
Although maybe redeemed herself.
Maybe they're making a social comment about how women just can't push themselves into the future and be their own independent.
I guess.
Possible.
It was just like,
I just pulled that out of my ass, but I think it sounds good.
I was like, what the hell? Why is this happening all over again? And then Scotty gets all jealous. He's like, oh, like hell you will.
You go, Scotty. You fight for your woman.
And then zap, and he falls over the table, which looked painful.
Yeah.
And then she was like, you know, don't hurt him. And he said, you seem wise for a woman. And I'm like, wow, that's
a
great way to veil an insult.
First impressions.
You're pretty ugly. I mean, you're pretty for a fat girl.
So, Sam, I don't know if you were listening in, but before we started recording, I was having a conversation with Neil about this episode. And it's not one of my favorite episodes, but upon, like, this is, like, my second viewing of it. It is so goddamn sexist.
Yeah.
Like, it is so terrible.
I think unintentionally. although I will say that it kind of makes sense from Apollo's standpoint, because back then, you know, during that time frame, But
Greek time as well as the 60s when this episode was written. I mean, it makes sense, but I didn't really catch a lot of it the first time around, and it was probably because I'm not... This episode moves really
because
weird.
You're Googling stuff about the episode?
Maybe. No, not this episode. It's pretty much, you know, it's got a weird pace to it.
Yeah. What was the second time that, like, there's another time when Scotty decided, oh, I gotta stop him again.
He does it, like, three times this episode.
Don't
learn.
Kirk tells him, like, don't do this again. I need you. Nope, I'm gonna do it.
Yeah. I when you're in love, you do crazy things?
No, this is an what do we call it? Sexist against men, that they're stupid and they only go after women.
A testosterone makes you do crazy things?
Yes, it does.
You don't go after women, Sam.
No, I don't. Although I will say that, well, when I was about to say Adonis. Apollo goes crazy again, and he starts choking Kirk. Is that in the next
part?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Okay.
It may be. I mean, it's everything just kind of blurs together.
Yeah.
Between...
It's the same thing.
I remember being like, "Oh God, don't kiss him." And then I remember there's a big ass bowl of wax fruit that McCoy lifts off the table. Yeah, I think you're right. I think he does choke a bitch.
Well, it's like Kirk is.
Sorry, I had to sneeze. I was trying not to do it, but I sneezed.
Kirk is very calm when he's getting choked. He's not trying to flail about or anything. He's not.
Well, you know, after being choked out by a Vulcan, I'm sure that being choked out by a god is not near as scary.
It's not that. It's just that you think when you're choking, you would be moving around a lot more than just slowly falling backward.
I don't know. Well, I don't,
depends.
I don't
like
know.
Force choke, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
It did seem more like a force choke.
Yeah, it did. Somebody wasn't lifted off of the. No, yeah. I guess he wasn't lifted off in the other one either.
So at this point, like, I remember, because, like, I want to call him Adonis, Apollo.
So that's the problem, too.
Weird, right?
Apollo would go off every once in a while and talk with the lady officer, and then the guys would be like, okay, what are we going to do, guys? And it's like, I wonder who's going to figure out this first, the people on the ground or the people on the ship? So I think that was the end of Act 2.
Pretty much. Act 3 is pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
Watch. I can... two sentences. Carolyn, who is madly in love with Apollo, must spurn him in order for the crew's plan to work. If not, well, that would suck.
At the very beginning of this, Apollo appears in his little throne, and he's like... he talks for a bit, and then he's like, oh, I'm tired now. And I said, is he winking out? Because I remember they used that phrase... earlier in this first season, and it was awkward. It was a great winking out.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yep. I like how the hand is like pinch, 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 like, you know, like you put your fingers up to your eye and you squish somebody.
You mean
it's doing, squishing your head?
Yeah.
It's doing that. It's doing that to the saucer section of the Enterprise.
And they seem fine.
I am squishing your hole. But, yeah, there's,
I think this is also where Uhura, where I was surprised that Uhura was making repairs. I didn't know she knew how to, I mean, it makes sense, but.
Uhura is a fucking goddamn genius.
Yeah, she is. I thought it was more of, like, technicians that did repairs and stuff, but.
You know, I think when you're on a ship...
when you're on the bridge, right? You better know everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she also did pilot for a little bit, too, if I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like most of the crew... I guess bridge crew especially, I guess that would make more sense that they are, you know...
Cross-trained,
yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I feel like in that situation, right, when you're on a ship in the middle of space and something goes wrong and everyone can die, you better know your stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like being in a submarine.
Yeah.
I think this is also the same, and correct me if I'm wrong, but where Kirk and Apollo start to kind of have like an argument, and Kirk says, we have no use for gods, the one is enough.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, from everything that we've seen so far, it doesn't seem like Kirk is very religious. Like, at all? So, is this, like, just a spite comment to Apollo?
It might just be... I think so, because I don't think he's talking personally.
Yeah.
But in the sense that, at that point in time, and even in this point in time, the majority of religions are monotheistic.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, but then you think it could be a jab at them because, you know, Christianity did take over the Greek pantheon.
Yeah.
I mean, it and that was a big bloody mess now, wasn't it?
Yep.
Well, yeah, it was more pagans and stuff, but yeah.
Well, no, they did the same thing with the Greek. I mean, there was a big thing about the Greeks slaughtering Christians for their beliefs, and eventually the Christians did win out.
Yeah, well, that was more Romans, though. Like, the Romans took the Greek pantheon. The Romans took the Greek pantheon and made it their own. And later, during, like, 400 A.D., the Roman Emperor Constantine basically said, okay, we're Christian now.
And that's so where, it was the Romans that were torturing the yeah. Christians, and
well, everybody. Was
well, I guess Christians, I guess
the
I
Romans were famous for it.
That
the Romans are the famous ones for it, crucifying them and
yeah,
all that shit.
Yeah,
all right, true. I got them mixed up. Man,
I'm surprised that they used Apollo as opposed to some of the other gods.
Which one would you have thought?
Like Artemides.
Artemis?
Artemis or, God, what is her name?
You'd think, honestly.
Not Dementia. God damn it.
Demeter? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel
those are both
like,
ladies, so.
So.
Here's my opinion. You'd think if they were to choose a Greek god, they would choose a powerful one like Zeus.
Well, okay.
But Apollo, you know, is... But he is the son of
yeah.
Zeus.
Yeah, he is.
Not only that, he is a god of music, poetry, apparently
knowledge.
The plague. but yeah, light, knowledge, medicine. But it's really weird to, you know, for a god of that nature, right? Would show up and be like, listen to me, adore me.
Zeus. Well, they established that all the gods kind of needed that. Like, that's how they feed. That's how they gain power.
Well, you know, that's so funny that you bring that up, because one of my favorite books, I think it's called Small Gods by Terry Pratchett. I've got it on my shelf. I just don't want to walk over there because I've got a headset on. But it is called Small Gods by Terry Pratchett. It's part of his Discworld series. And the premise of the book is that there's this all-powerful god who loses all these followers or people lose belief in him. And then he's reincarnated as a turtle. And it is a fantastic book. I mean, that's the whole premise is this turtle goes on and tries to regain his followers so he can become a true god again. But now he's just a small god. That's the turtle. If you guys haven't read any of Terry Pratchett's work, it's fucking hilarious. It's great.
Did he do paintings?
Terry Pratchett?
Yes.
Good question. I've only read his books.
Okay. Never mind.
But he may have. I mean, have you seen the picture of the... Oh, no. I think that's Asian mythology, too. No, I don't think he's done paintings.
Okay. Never mind.
He's a writer, and he does fantasy novels, and he's most well-known for the Discworld series.
Okay. Because there's a painting that kind of reminds me of what you're talking about, but not really. But that's,
is it
that's
a
just
flat disc balance on the back of elephants on a huge turtle swimming through the universe?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's Discworld.
Okay.
But I don't know if he actually painted it.
Somebody used that as a board game cover. I don't know how they got the rights for it, but
yeah. I think I'm pretty sure that I've seen that same imagery come up in like Asian artwork. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just imagining things. I mean, point is Apollo is whiny because
he doesn't
you know,
have
they left
anybody.
Earth. He doesn't have any followers, and I can see that how a god would need believers in order to. Bring him to life, essentially.
Well, they established that's what the organ was. Like, they're we don't know what, we don't entirely know what his other organ does, but we believe that it basically
it gathers
turns,
adoration.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see Zeus being there because Zeus wasn't in love with his children. You know,
he would turn into a goat or whatever and have sex with them.
It was a goose. Yeah, he's more
Zeus,
of like the ruling
Zeus,
body. He's just
Zeus
like I'm
just
there.
Like to rape everyone.
Yeah,
is what you're trying to say there, Sam? It doesn't matter. And he didn't like his kids. He tried to kill some of them, but he made a lot of them.
That's why I was thinking maybe
Artemis.
Artemis. I'm gonna say Archimedes for some reason.
You're thinking of Archimedes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you're thinking of Archimedes.
But I think that
why Artemis? Just out of curiosity, why Artemis?
She was knowledge, if I'm not mistaken.
Artemis was hunt. She was the goddess of hunt.
Oh, was she?
That's not Athena.
Wait a minute. No, I'm pretty sure.
Are we confusing Greek with Roman? No, we can't. Roman is like planet.
Yeah. Mars.
So Artemis is goddess of the hunt. Athena is actually like goddess of battle.
Okay.
Oh, there's so many of them.
Yeah. Then there's the Jeff god of biscuits.
You know, and this is why polytheistic religion has went out of style. Once you get past two, it's just confusing as all hell.
Artemis is hunt, wild animals, wilderness, childbirth, and virginity. However, that works.
She's both.
And none.
Whereas Athena is the goddess of wisdom, warfare, divine intelligence, architecture, and crafts, as well as the patron goddess of Athens. Surprise! Thank you, Wikipedia.
To the rescue.
To the West View.
So there was. Let's see.
This is how interesting the episode is. We're going to talk about the Greek pantheon and what they represent instead of the Apollo, who is absolutely annoying in this episode. Trying so hard.
So for Act 3, there was one thing that really. Because I remember in season one, we kept giving guys shit because they were so easily, you know, googly-eyed.
Oh my goodness.
By women, which, Apollo's doing the same thing.
Oh my god, so here. Bad. So
but
bad.
But at the same time, they have the lieutenant, I guess, like, falling in love with him rather quickly.
Well, yeah, because he's all like,
he glammed her.
Well, we picked mortal women and chose them to be our marital consorts or whatever the blah, 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 blah. And let's make 1,000 babies. I will treat you like a queen. You will be a queen.
You'll be the mother of a new race, I think is something he said.
Yeah, something like that, which personally I don't find romantic at all.
No.
Like, shoot, that, your shit would be.
You're going to be a baby-making machine.
Yeah.
So the thing is, like, just looking at Apollo, I'm like, man, this guy's been without a woman for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So I can see why he gets upset.
Can you imagine how bad that would be? Like, he just blows up to the side of the size of the universe and da 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 smash smash planet gone.
So does this lead us into chapter?
You know, I think it is. I think it is. So you know, Spock figures out that Apollo's power comes from his temple, and Carolyn goes through with the Cap's plan to reject Apollo. And so this weakens the force field around the temple, and the Enterprise destroys it, and Apollo, all butthurt and powerless, joins his fellow gods and spreads himself upon the wind. And apparently Kirk and McCoy feel bad about this, but, you know, mankind can no longer give these gods what they need.
The end.
The end. But apparently, you know, how terrible would it be to be like an all-powerful, nearly omnipotent being and to be spurned by a mortal?
To be compared to bacteria.
Yeah, compared to bacteria. Oh my goodness. I mean, you could tell she was like lying through her fucking teeth.
Yeah, she had to turn around to say it. But
although I did find it funny that she was like, oh, I can't. Oh, the wind is too much blowing over. Oh, I fell. I fell again.
Oh, my ankles.
Stumbled.
My weak lady legs.
Cankles.
Ah, you know what would have been funny if a bear came out and mauled her?
Out of nowhere.
And
that's
then
random.
Spock fought the bear, stuffed it, and then put disco lights in it.
Yeah.
inside of it, so you can't see it, exactly. Except through its mouth. You see lights.
That'd be kind of scary, actually.
And then you would have what's that newfangled music called? The
dubstep.
Dubstep. Yeah. God, I don't understand children nowadays and their dubsteps.
It's depressing, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, but that's the dead mouse is okay. I'm not cool with Skrillex. Just saying.
Skrillex excrement.
Anywho's, enough about the bear. This is. I'm spending so much time on this bear.
Whoa. I was surprised at how much phaser fire his little gazebo pantheon. Because it was going on. It was like full charge phasers from the ship for a good, I don't know, 20 seconds. That wasn't 2 minutes.
I thought it was like 2 minutes.
Maybe it was 2 minutes real time, but
yeah, and it just
got superheated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that it got all white wavy and then it disappeared, like, and then there's like rubble.
Oh no, no. Like it was
evaporated or something.
It was in Back to the Future and it was disappearing.
So if somebody saved the Pantheon's father.
I kind of felt a little bad for him too, but
really?
Not really.
Oh.
I felt bad for him, a little bad for him towards the end because, you know.
He was the last
one. I think he was just lonely. He was really lonely and he was just trying to pick up where he left off.
Yeah.
And that wasn't possible anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was the case, maybe he should have stayed on Earth. Yeah. But then again, you know, once the monotheistic stuff came in, maybe he just didn't feel welcome or he lost his believers. I mean, point is, you can't bully people into doing what you want them to do.
Well, you can for a short amount of time and then they're just.
Well, he was able to because he's.
He had a giant hand in space.
He can smite things. I mean, how many times did we hear that freaking lightning strike?
Why didn't like a giant green penis just show up and just be like, you know, wrap itself around the Enterprise?
Why penis?
Why not?
Why not intestines? Slap? Intestines would make more sense because then it could
actually. Or like 2 feet.
Yeah.
With my feet.
Constrict it.
I don't know.
Maybe why a hand? He doesn't need to get that energy to look like a hand. I mean, really, I don't understand why they feel bad. I mean,
hang on a second.
He is a humanoid with an extra organ that makes him like super powerful and gives him, he needs to have that adoration. But his buddies were all like, eh, we're over this, and left. And he was just really stubborn about it. And he was just like, oh, love me. Love me. I can understand feeling bad for his situation, but he was an ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't have any remorse for him.
I stopped feeling bad when he was like, "This is your fault, Carolyn." I'm like, "No, it's not. No, it is absolutely not."
No.
And there he goes into the ether.
Poor Carolyn. Carolyn.
So
that's all I got.
Yeah. Pretty much.
This really, like, does anyone else, Neil, I know you feel this way. The pacing is just.
It was kind of all over the place, and it's like, especially when, like, Scotty's, like, tries to attack him, like, 3 times, and it's like, you should have just learned after the first one. But.
Zap me once, shame on you. Zap me
twice. Shame on.
Me. I'm an idiot.
Me.
Shame on, well, you don't zap me again. That's what it was. Yeah, the pacing was off, and it seemed like this story could have been told in a shorter amount of time.
It could have been. I think it could have been told in a way that would have been a little bit more meaningful.
Or they could have done more with the ship.
A lot of the fluff was Apollo and Carolyn talking and wherever they were.
Yeah.
Which was weird, but.
But no, I feel like they had you know, commentary to make about number one, women in the workplace, as well as you know, how we view religion in a modern day society, or at least, you know, 60s versus the 60s future in this instance. I did think they were trying to go for a message. We just didn't quite get it. They didn't.
Yeah, it definitely fell short. There's a lot of potential with what they had, but it just no, it didn't. It didn't reach it. It did nothing for me. I didn't need a smoke afterward.
But I think if I were to give it a rating, I mean, it's not completely bad. It's not one of my favorite episodes, but I didn't absolutely hate it. I'd give it a 2.
That's what I was going to give it.
Yeah, I'll give it a 2.
Wow, for once, we are all agreeing on this.
I was partially excited because I'm like, ooh, you know, Greek mythology, but then he never really did anything Apollo-like, so I was like...
Yeah, yeah. No, he was pretty much like, look at me grow! Look at me shoot lightning! I'm gonna fuse your phasers!
Aren't you impressed?
It's like, no. Go back to normal size. I don't want to look up your tunic. If you can grow, why don't you make the one thing that counts grow?
Because then it would be awkward and you wouldn't be able to walk around.
Well, if you're...
Just saying.
Never mind. I feel like I butchered that joke, or you just... I just butchered the joke. We'll just put the blame on you guys. Anywho, 2s all around. And oh. A muck time. 5s all around. I just think it's nice that we're all agreeing, because usually, you know,
for
it's...
once.
Give some time. We, you know, we've taken a little bit of a break. I'm sure we'll get back into true form.
We'll break our form.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We'll see how that goes as we continue into season 2.
Okay. So our next episodes are The Changeling and, oh my God, Mirror Mirror.
Oh. Ooh. This will be exciting. I haven't seen Changeling in a while.
Let's see Changeling.
It's the robot.
The robot.
Now I know what it is. That is that I'm excited about these two episodes. I am so excited. You know what I like about Mirror Mirror is I like how they bring it back up in Deep Space Nine.
You'll see it in Enterprise.
Really?
No spoilers.
Okay. We'll not research.
Don't do it. Don't do it. You're almost done with Star Trek in general.
Just let it happen.
Yeah.
So, once again, listeners, thank you for dropping by and joining us for the Kobayashi Maru Dance Party. Come on.